Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and it's not just Friday, it's follow-up Friday. Today, we're following up on a comment conservative writer Richard Brookhiser made on Tuesday in explaining how the Republicans have gone from 2008 candidate John McCain.
The facts of global warming demand our urgent attention, especially in Washington.
To this from 2012 contender Michelle Bachmann.
Carbon dioxide is natural. It occurs in Earth. Carbon dioxide is not a harmful gas. It is a harmless gas.
This was the explanation for the change.
Things change. People settle into problems. They come to understand the dimensions of them. The scandal of the English climate scientists who were cooking their data in order to produce some of the graphs and charts that are used to illustrate the problem of global warming, that's a relatively new thing. I don't think that had broken in 2008.
The ClimateGate scandals, as those emails were known, were an embarrassment, but there were five investigations into the matter, and they all exonerated the research. So why would that call the reality of man-made climate change into question? To follow up, we're going to someone who was once a global warming skeptic but has since changed his mind. Ron Bailey is the science correspondent for the libertarian magazine Reason, and he's joining me now. Welcome to WNYC.
Delighted to be with you.
So, Ron, you once edited a book called Global Warming and Other Eco-Myths, How the Environmental Movement Uses False Science to Scare Us to Death. And I'm going to tell you, I read a good chunk of that book. And I know you're not a fan of a lot of the suggested solutions to global warming, but you do accept the underlying premise that it's happening, right?
Yes, I do.
So what convinced you?
Well, basically, it's a weight of the evidence kind of argument. Is that over time you would get this, you would see how the trends are going, but you also would see trends like sea level rise, glaciers melting around the globe, that kind of thing. And eventually, it became a weight of the evidence that I was going, well, it is probably happening, and I should get on board with that. Of course, it doesn't tell you what you should do about it, but at least you shouldn't go around fighting the science anymore.
So what are the ClimateGate emails that Brookhiser was referring to?
Well, that's a very vexed problem. What happened, of course, is there was a data dump, no one knows who did it, of a bunch of emails and other data, actually, out of one of the leading climatology labs in the world at the University of East Anglia. And the emails were quite unlovely. It was first of all, it was quite apparent that the scientists there were trying to avoid participating in a Freedom of Information Act queries that people were having. They were hiding their data, whatever it was. And so it led to suspicions that there's something going on. If you're not going to share your data, which you should be doing in science, people are going, what is this all about? You're not obeying the Freedom of Information Act queries. And in fact, you're positively fighting against them. And then you had another problem is that the emails made it quite apparent that they were trying to steer the literature. They were trying to keep scientists who disagreed with them out of publication. And again, that seemed to be a little conspiratorial on the face of it. So this allowed skeptics to go, see, these guys are hiding the ball. There's something wrong. Now, you did say that five groups have exonerated, you know, who have looked into this have exonerated them, and that's true to the extent that they basically said that, as far as we can tell, the processes that they engaged in were fine, but none of these groups actually looked at their data. So that's still something that people might want to contest. But they were exonerated in the sense that, well, all right, they weren't very lovely, and they did violate Freedom of Information Act query problems and so forth, but we can't see that the process itself was completely corrupt.
Because at the time, you wrote, right after they came out in 2009, you said they needed to be investigated.
Yes.
Right? And they were.
Yes.
Weren't they? I mean, thoroughly, do you think? I mean, did any of the investigation turn up cooked data, if I can use that expression?
No, they didn't turn up cooked data, but largely because, and I don't think the data was cooked, because I've looked at it and talked to other researchers around the world, but the actual committees didn't look into the data all that closely, is the truth of the matter. Basically, what I was hoping would come out of this was more transparency. One of the problems has been, and climate science is possibly the most politicized science out there now. It used to be genetically modified crops, but it's now climate science. And when you're in politicized science, you have to be as open as you can be with all your data and your methods. And what I was hoping is that this would be a lesson to the research community, is you really have to publish everything. You can't hold anything back. And I don't think that they've learned that yet.
Why do you think these are still showing up as a way of disputing global warming? I mean, you're hinting at the politics of it all, but that can't be the only reason.
Well, other things have come to light, unfortunately, subsequent to this, because one of the things that happened is that when people started looking more deeply into the science that had been cited in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's analyses, right, they found things like, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a claim made that the Himalayan glaciers could all melt away by 2030. It turned out that that was sourced to one quote in a popular science magazine called New Science by a guy speculating about it. And it turns out that nobody actually believes that. And so that was a problem. And then more recently, the IPCC, the UN body that does this stuff, released a report on renewable fuels, claiming that we could use renewable fuels to supply 80% of the world's energy by 2050. And that was sourced to a Greenpeace report. Again, the conflicts of interest, they're not doing themselves any favor. Yeah. They need to be more open and honest.
And we want our listeners to know we can take a call or two about this. What debate do you think we need to have about global warming? What do you want to hear from your presidential candidates or other important thinkers on the topic? Democrats, Republicans, call us 212-433-WMYC, 212-433-9692. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer and my guest. I think it's fair to say, once a skeptic, now I don't want to say a believer, because that carries with it its own freighted meaning. Ron Bailey is the science correspondent. Let's just call it like it is. The science correspondent for the libertarian magazine Reason. And we're talking about the global warming debate, but in a very specific follow-up to our segment earlier in the week. And we're talking about ClimateGate and this email. I don't want to call it a scandal, but I guess it was in a way. Do you think there is really still a partisan divide over the facts of global warming, or is the divide over the actions we should take, Ron?
Well, there is I think there is a partisan divide over, unfortunately, the facts of global warming. Mitt Romney, of course, just last week in New Hampshire said he thought that global warming was a problem and that it was human caused. So some of the Republican candidates for president are on board with the scientific consensus on this, but many of them are not.
But when I asked the question, maybe I should have said, do you think there's a significant partisan divide?
If you look at the polling, the answer is quite truly, yes.
Wow.
So, yes, there is. Most Republicans don't believe that global warming is a problem, and most Democrats do.
Wow. All right, let's take a call. Gary is calling us from Queens. Gary, you're on WMYC.
Hello. If I can just take a minute, I'll give a conservative view. And I
Please.
Admit that many conservatives, political conservatives, are not articulate on the science, and neither am I.
Gary, I want to hear your view, but we do have to keep it tight. So please, we're up against the back of the hour.
One thing is that we do admit that we're in a warming phase. We may be coming out of it, but the main dispute is not over CO2 or the is a greenhouse gas, but rather what effect is it having in relation to other factors that may be contributing to warming, and the second is that what do we do? If every nation adopted a Kyoto-like measure, in the next 50 years, it only stem the rise in climate by maybe a fraction of a degree. So the second thing is, what can man really do, and not dismantle economic growth in doing so, which could, in effect, lead to a an alternative to energy technologies.
Well,
so,
Gary, you certainly raised a very easy question for our guest in the last 30 seconds of the show. Thanks for your call. All right, Ron, how about it? What do we do?
Well, the problem is I've been a reporter covering this area for over 20 years. I've been to 7 UN climate change meetings, and I've concluded that the Kyoto Protocol process of cap and trade is simply not going to work. The Europeans are having problems implementing it, and the Europeans are, you know, honest bureaucrats, and they should be able to do that. But to imagine that whole process where you have to report how much greenhouse gases you're emitting would apply to China, Brazil, Mexico, India, South Africa, you know, that's not going to happen. The Europeans cheated when they started their system, and to imagine that this kind of system would work across the world wouldn't work. I just don't think it'll work. So my policy suggestion is that what you do is try to create, and I think the world is going to move in this direction, a harmonized carbon tax. It's very transparent. You know whether a country has implemented it or not. Mm-hmm. You charge the tax at the mine head, at the wellhead for oil, and it goes through the economy there, and you gradually raise it over time. That would be my solution.
And you did it in 30 seconds. Very impressive, and we have to leave it there. Ron Bailey, thank you so much. Science correspondent for Reason Magazine. We hope you'll come back. And coming up after the news, we are going to be talking all about the strategic oil release. Stay with us.